Well, good morning, everybody, both to the individuals, members, and visitors here in the East Tacoma Church of Christ Auditorium, but to the members we have both regionally and nationally and internationally. What a joy to be together. We've been talking about a series of songs that dealt with the idea of home and family. Now, we talked about this song of Guide Me, O Thou Rock of Ages. One of the things that I'm hoping that we do is we're going to end the sermon right there. Is we've had some challenges with this deck, and we're not going to let that defeat us, because sometimes we put things in and whatever the marvelous reason is, it didn't quite take. And so I had, let's put it on date, and I'll just go this way, and it should still work. And what we're going to talk about this morning is everything you need to know to be a Christian husband in 30 minutes. Well, actually, that's impossible. But we will talk about a number of things that you can use that is helpful. And then what I'll have to do is switch back to the deck and get that last song. And it'll be fine. We'll let people that know way more about digital stuff figure all those details out. The first thing, there's a lot about marriage that is a point of view. And this particular graphic here is a guy laying in bed and he looks all green and awful. And here's a doctor and his wife standing by. And the doctor says, ma'am, I don't like how your husband looks. And she said, I don't like how he looks either, but he's good to the kids. And so sometimes you're using the same language and still talking about the opposite thing. And that's a challenging thing to do. As we look at ourselves, particularly as husbands, that's going to be our focus this morning. What kind of grade would you give yourself? Well, everybody should get an A. Well, that's true. But sometimes, some individuals, that might be A+. Or maybe it is A or B or C or D or one of those other unmentionable letters of the alphabet. You say, oh, no, look at that. But the reality is probably there are some areas that we do better. And some areas not as good. Remember just in school, that some areas, oh boy, you just did great in this one and not as good in this one, and C's or B's in some other one. Think about the different areas that we have in which to operate. There's the financial realm. How do we do there? And what about the communication? What about compassion? How about parenting? What about problem solving, husband and wife? What about grooming? How do we take care of ourselves? Or thankfulness, joy, or sacrificial loving, or understanding and commitment, spirituality? There's all these different areas. Obviously, you can't in 30 minutes say, yep, we're covering them all, we're done, and we're good to go. But we get them introduced. And so as we think about that kind of thing, think about the steps that got us to wherever we are right now. Sometime in your life, if you're married, sometime you said your I do's. And the question is, now what? The courtship is over and it was great. If it wouldn't have been great, you probably wouldn't have got married, right? You said, oh boy, that's a lost cause. And then the wedding is done and it was good. And then the honeymoon is over and it was good for some, or not so much for others, just different situations. And then you wonder, what am I going to do for the next 50 years of my life? Because from a guy's standpoint, someone else is sharing every inch of your space. I was talking to Paul Mitchell. He lost his wife, Nancy, and I asked him, well, how is it for you? And he said, well, the oddity, you know, I've been married 50 years, and he said, now every decision is solo. Should I do this or that? You don't check with your mate. You know, how do you think about it and feel about it and negotiate and these kind of things? Well, when you're married, guess what? You do. And then maybe for young people that it's a surprise, you're both expected to start changing little things. And so we husbands are the same way. And it's just, there's so much, because the other person that you love is so far different in background or personality or viewpoints than you are. There is so much to compromise. And from a guy's standpoint, some of them feel like, man, you lost the freedom you didn't even know you had. So, because it's all change. It becomes us and how do we work together. And so there's those things to weigh. But as Jim Hester said in the Lord's Supper devotional, you know, what does the Bible say about it? We've got a book that tells us what to do. In Psalm 119:105, thy word is a light to my path and a lamp to my feet. We know how to go, how to get there. God tells us, all right, if you're going to be a husband, a wife, or a young person, whatever it is, that here is the direction. And it really works out so much better when you do it the way God wants you to do it rather than the way other people in society say. So I have a handful of things I'd like us to cover. And the first one is the obvious one. In Ephesians chapter 5 and down in verse 28, it said, husbands, love your wives as you love yourself. Well, that's hard to do for lots of husbands that we kind of see our point of view and our wishes and our time frame and all such as this. You might like this little graphic. Guy's gone out fishing. The fishing boat has turned over. He got all his gear and he's headed up to the dock and some old bozo's on the dock. And the guy says, here, hold these things. I have to go back for my wife. Oh, I tell you what. Well, I wonder what was at first in his mind about importance. Well, I don't want to lose all my fishing gear. And oh my goodness, when he gets back to the wife, that is not going to be pretty. So I wondered, well, how do you love your wife as yourself? Well, the very next verse talks about that a little bit. In Ephesians chapter 5 and in verse 29 says, no man ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes. So he said, that's how you treat your wife. You nourish her and cherish her. That idea of nourish carries more than just food, but it would include food. Glenn and I eat miles different. She's on a very, very tightly restricted diet. And I'm like, yeah, whatever for me. And so if we go to a restaurant, what can you eat? If we're dinner at home, can you eat this? Because her's so highly restricted. How about rest? She needs, particularly in young marriage, lots more. Well, you get old, you don't need as much, or your body just says, well, here it is, 3 a.m, I'm up, whatever, and you're good to go again. And so what about self-esteem in praising her or encouraging personal growth or providing for safety or long walks or expressions of love? And so whatever you think you would need to get along, now you look at her and what will fulfill her? What will build her up? What will make it better for her? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Love your wives as you love yourself. And part of that is going to be about sacrificing for your wife. As I thought about that, I thought, well, some people might say, sacrifice, oh man, that's all I ever do. Well, it may be, but maybe not. And then I thought about this. Sacrifice is not just for love. You sacrifice in all of life to make things better. Women, you know a lot more about this than we men do. Childbirth is a sacrifice. Wow. The months of carrying the child and then the birthing of the child and then caring for those little babies. Those are major, major sacrifices with great rewards, but they're great sacrifices. Education is about sacrifice. Kids, young people, young adults going to school, spending the time learning the stuff, doing better, working and growing and passing the test and all these kind of things. That's a sacrifice. Athletic preparation is about sacrifice. Military service is about sacrifice. Christianity is about sacrifice. So when he's talking about sacrificing for love, sacrificing for life, for your wife, for your children, all of life includes those components. In Ephesians 5:25, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So really sacrifice is giving yourself up for some other person, some other cause, because the rewards are enormous. And I thought about this. I've been asked, and I've thought about through the years about going skydiving. Maybe one day when I get old, I'll do that. But I thought, you know, if something goes wrong, you know, splat, there's not a lot of do-overs in that kind of thing. So one person had this illustration. What if you're in a plane? Let's just say it's just a small little Cessna, and it starts going down, and the pilot can't save it. And he said, okay, I got a parachute. Get in the parachute, you guys, and I'll see you later. Boom! And he pops out the door. You go, whoa, there's you and your wife. And you look over, and there's one parachute. Husbands, what do you do? One guy said, well, you're going to see this man putting a parachute on his wife. You go, wow, that's chilling. It's noble. It's the right thing to do. The other guy said, I'm going to put it on and say, hang on tight, honey. I said, oh, no, that is not the right answer. And so she's not going to have enough upper body strength to do that. And so what is sacrificing for your wife? Well, there'll be things like maybe she has less energy. And so you help her things with things that overwhelm her. And so appreciative for that. Or what an area of time if she's sick or down and you were going out the door to do this, but suddenly the priorities have changed and you're not going to do that. You're rearranging your priority, adjusting your plans because there's something here that's more important. Now, and don't misunderstand me. I don't mean if she's got the cold, got the sniffles, and I have to call in work for 6 months straight and say, I can't show up today. Well, you won't have to do that for long because that just sends you down the road. But when there's something really major, you address the priorities. And sometimes the priority is going to be the kids. Sometimes the car's on fire. We've had that. Sometimes it's your wife. And you address the priorities and bless her. And in money, you sacrifice. You sacrifice for what truly blesses her and the family. There are different times as we'd go along in young marriage and things were really, really tight when we first got married. Like our first Christmas, I had $1. And she said, well, let's not get anything for each other. Well, that would have been a 50-cent thing. And so I spirited myself out and I got her a $1 present. And that was our first Christmas. And he said, what'd that mean? Oh, that meant tons to both of us. Why? Because there wasn't anything else. And as we went through the years, sometimes it would be flowers or this or that or things. And she said, Paul, you shouldn't have done that. I just say, you were worth it. Because you look at what's the priority in your life. And then sometimes it's expectations. You know, we got the remote and we want to watch TV and this is the program, whether it's football or some other sports or this or that. And here little kids want to watch cartoons or the wife want to watch what Glenda calls puffy sleeve movies. And so it doesn't always flow one way or the other. But that willingness, you were going to go someplace and that didn't work out. Rather than pout about it and tantrum about it, change your expectations. Well, I guess we're not doing that today. And so there's a give and take to it, but there's a joyousness to sacrificing about it. Because now it's not self-centered, what I get. It's about us, the family, what's good for them. Everything you need to know about being a husband. One is love is about speaking gently to her. I particularly chose a little graphic here where the couple seem to be enjoying talking to each other rather than, you know, at each other's throats. Passage in Proverbs 15 and verse 1, the New Living Translation cites as, a gentle answer deflects anger, but harsh words make tempers flare. So all of us have a choice of words. I don't know how many words there are in English language, 15,000, 25,000, so there's lots. And we have a choice of how we want to respond to other people. Some people by nature, like Rocky's extremely, extremely calm. Others of us, not quite so much. But we do have control of the tongue. That's what James says. So there's a handful of things I want to share. when you're in kind of that verbal conflict, you can think before you speak. It's much less profitable of speaking before you think. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and down in verse 7. That's where Solomon says that there's a time to speak and a time to be silent. Sometimes it's good just to say nothing. The other person said, and he said, you could respond. In fact, you got the zinger. It'll feel real good for the moment. But then you got to live with that thing. So maybe it's best to be a little calmer. Take a breath. Mull over. I've got these choice of responses. May I choose the better one by thinking? And then as you do, generally use sweeter words rather than the meaner words. Colossians 4:6, I quote all the time. That aspect, let your speech be always with grace. If I'm going to say, I'm angry, and so what I want to say is, but that's not really going to help it very well. It's really going to inflame tempers, just make things more agitated. And sometimes, hardly ever, husbands, we're wrong. And I'd say that with humor. And then you got to eat your words, so they might as well be sweet. They go down a little better when you have to take them back. I'm sorry. I was wrong. Please forgive me. I'll try to do better. Another way is choose words that don't wound. In Proverbs chapter 12 and in verse 18, some speech is like thrusts of a sword. Man, they just impale the other person. And think of what happens with that. It's not like that, oh man, that's really painful, but okay, I'm all better now. You remember things that were said to you, maybe that were mean or cutting or vicious from years ago, from childhood. You go, phew, man, that was uncomfortable. And you carry it the rest of your life. So now you get to be the opportunity of your words can bring healing or wounding. Think, what could I say that'll actually make things better rather than just inflame the situation? So how do I do that? Well, you all know this one. You've heard it anyhow. It's a little bit more difficult but helpful. When you're in conflict, husbands, use the I statements rather than the you. If she said something really cutting and such as that, rather than, you always talk that way, man, you're just mean. You got a vicious spirit and you thing. Well, that's not going to solve it. You can say the I statements. You know, I'm really hurt when I hear things that I think are unfair about when I try to do this, if I don't measure up to everyone's expectations, meaning her in this case, I really struggle with that. And so that hasn't attacked the other person. You're just saying where you are in this painful discussion. And then identify possible solutions. Well, there isn't any solutions. Almost always there's a solution. Maybe there's just one way, but it's a better way than just giving up. Or maybe there's three options. There might be eight different options. Some aren't as good as others, but there are options. And that gives hope to the situation. And then don't hold grudges. In Leviticus chapter 19 and in verse 18 is that passage that you shall not bear a grudge against any of the sons of your people. This is Old Testament language. But you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Huh. Guess what? That's what Jesus quotes in the New Testament as the second greatest commandments. It's easy to hold, now not everybody does it naturally, but it's easy to hold grudges. You just store them up, put them in a little box. I'm going to remember them, and the next time they say that, I'm going to get out my little mental notepad, and I'll start going down. I remember in 1949, you said, or whatever, you know. And it's just, God says, don't do that. Forgive and let that go. Love is about speaking gently to her. And then here's an interesting one. Love is about understanding her, or at least dwelling in an understanding way. Peter said, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with a weaker vessel, since she's a woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life. And so I like this graphic. They're out someplace, probably on vacation, and under a tree, and here's a double swing, and she has her head on his shoulder, would suggest, you know, they're in a good relationship. Oscar Wilde said, he's an Irish poet, said, women are not meant to be loved, but understood. Well, I got that from Dave Campbell, who said, I really liked your lesson last week that was on women, but you know, here's what Oscar Wilde said. And there's something to that. That is, as husbands, we don't understand every particle. But the flip side of that is, we're called to be students of our wives. What is it that they need? Every one of you got here by some kind of vehicle, car or bus. Every one of those vehicles is different. They have, oh, you know, the light switch doesn't work very good, or the windshield wiper's this or that, or I've got extra space, or I got this really noisy, blah, blah. Anyhow, so they're different. But you know your car. You know how to get it started. You know how to get it here. You know, ignore that warning light. It's always on or whatever, and that's fine. Do not ignore this other warning light. That's danger and such along that line. So you think about, husbands, what blesses her? What makes her feel loved? And in fact, I don't know, 25 years from Jim Hester here, I got the love languages. And so there's some people, it's meaningful touch, and some it's encouraging words, and some it's act of service. So all these different areas. Well, what really makes your wife's heart beat faster? Where she, oh, boy, I love that. Glenda really likes when I do priority jobs around the house. I fix this or fix that, and I can just say, ah, boy, I get those, that really mellow feeling. So what energizes your wife? What five things is she good at? That lets you know you're thinking about her and her blessings and her talents, and you can encourage her in the things that really is among her God-given talents. What lays heavy on her heart? What makes her feel special? Find out and do it. That's how you are a husband and living in an understanding way. Now, last week, I had a graphic of how a man, it wasn't how women's mind are, it's how men see women's mind. Brace yourself, men. Now you get to see the man's mind as a woman sees it. It's not necessarily the way it is, but that's how, and it's nothing's 100%, but kind of 80-20, women kind of think about men this way. So how is it that women see men's brains? Meant to be humorous rather than scientific. One is that there's the domestic skills molecule. I mean, it barely exists. I mean, the idea of actually cooking or cleaning. Now, some men are great at cooking and this and that. But man, if you look at yours truly, this is just not my, I mean, I can wash the dishes. What does that mean? Rinse them off and put them in the dishwasher. How about cooking? Well, just a couple of years ago, Glenda said, Paul, if I died, you would starve to death. I thought, well, that's a challenge. So I learned I can do it. But boy, it's really an effort for me. And so I'd much rather just open a can of tuna fish, you know, get out a spoon and I'm good. But that's not really what you call cooking. And so I'm not really talented in the domestic skills compartment. How about the dangerous pursuits? Man, we're good at that. Here, Jim Hester on the quad. Man, I love motorcycles and extreme roller coasters. I love going up in 100-year-old biplanes, and you're in an open cockpit and it's covered with fabric. And whoa, man, that is great. Let's have fun. Some women are like that. Not all women. And so I wonder, why do you, everything that you like has to be dangerous? It's exciting. That's why it is. And then there is a large part of a male brain, but not all males are this way. It's sports. Anything having to do with basketball, baseball, football, golf, hunting, dominoes, anything that's chess, anything that's on TV that sounds like competitive, mixed martial arts, yeah, that really appeals to guys. Then there's the ability to enter a garage without hitting it. Not all women have this function in their brain. It's really there. But one of the interesting things about it, men tend to be more spatially aware than women, meaning how many inches, how far, this and that. It is not a universal, but by and far, there are more men architects than women. That may be a gender prejudicial thing, but it's just easy for me to see, look, that's going to be about 5'2", and that's a gift we guys, whether developed or God or whatever. And then there's women, the nothing box. You ask your husband, what are you thinking about? And he says, nothing. Well, that is incomprehensible to a woman. A woman's mind is always active and it's always thinking and has 7 or 8 things going on at the same time. And a man just kind of staring off there, and she says, what do you think about Harold? He said, nothing. She thinks he's lying. No, there's nothing going on. A man goes kind of into a mental hibernation every once in a while. There's really nothing happening there. He wasn't thinking anything bad, wasn't anything any good. It's just kind of a mental pause right there. Women don't seem to have that as much. Then there's the listening particle. We're not awfully good at that. We need to be better at that. Our wives, I told him that and he still doesn't get it. Or you, I told you 3 times. And so we need to do better. Then there's the avoid personal questions at all costs. Generally, men dislike that. How you doing? I'm fine. We just don't want to talk about those things. And some guys won't talk about it at all. Some guys are very verbal. Then there's the lame excuses gland. I forgot. The battery went dead. Well, you could have borrowed somebody else's phone. Or if it's a car, you could have gotten a jump. It's been 8 hours. How come I haven't heard from you? Well, not very good. Then there's the sex area. Here's how women see men's mind. That's the main thing that dominates everything else in your life. Now, that tends to be so when a person's about 17 or 18. They don't much think about anything else. But that is a dominant thing, but not for everybody. And there's a large section of man's mind devoted to the TV remote control. I mean, you feel uneasy when she has it. I mean, we should be able to, because they want to watch a movie. We want to click between channels and watch mixed martial arts over here and motocross dirt bike over there. Well, fine, we'll move back and forth. It's just different for women. And like for women, we mentioned in women's brain, men have a screw loose. But that's how they see us. There's some truth in that matter because we're not always thinking in the right way. And then finally, there's the listening for children at night gland. One person said, it's actually too small to be seen without a microscope. Man, I just sleep through everything. Glenda hears this little, there was a cricket outside. But we had different things. And when we were in Renton, we had a group of teenagers came just to prank our house, you know, put up saran wrap and toilet paper and all these different things. I mean, they're clumping around on our back deck. Was I aware of it? Oh, no. Slept right through it. Glenda's waking up. Paul, there's robbers on the roof. And I wake up. A robber? What would a robber be doing on the roof if he was a robber? And I'd go, oh, no, that's not what's happening. Here's kids out there in the backyard. So we are different, men and women. And we really need each other. And so how does that work? Well, this one here is how men and women think, and they think differently. Women, you are much more global. You're seeing all these different things. And I came across this a long time ago, and the mission was go to the Gap and buy a pair of pants. That's what we're supposed to do. How does that work in a woman's brain? This is just meant to be humorous. This is not meant to be for fact, but here's what a woman does. She comes into the mall, goes into every store, and Macy's and Sears and JCPenney's and all the little kiosks around the side, and doesn't actually go to Gap at all, and spends 3.5 hours and $878 and comes out with something else that was really just struck their heart. How does a man see it? Well, here's the male point of view. I'm going to come in, go to the Gap. I spent 6 minutes and $30 and I'm done. But the reality is, why are we that way? Because women are so global. You see kind of how all these pieces fit together. We men don't. I got the spatula. Glenda cooked dinner and get all done. I forgot the salad. I hadn't even thought about salad. I was just interested in what we had. And so men were real good at focusing on a single thing, but not on multiple things. Love is being thankful for your wife. Proverbs 19:14, house and wealth are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. And so think about those great qualities as cited in the worthy woman in Proverbs 31. And verse 11 says, the heart of her husband safely trusts in her. You trust her for anything, with anything, she'll be honorable about it. Works hard, works long. She rises while it's yet night and gives food to her household. And 16, has a financial vision. She purchases a field and plants a vineyard. She's clothed with strength and dignity. Verse 20, she extends her hand to the poor. Verse 25, she smiles at the future. It's not, we got this covered. We're going to be fine. Yeah, but what if happens? We've got extra. She's wise. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She's spiritual. Verse 30, she fears the Lord. Husbands, you got a wife like that. You got a treasure. That's the worthy woman whose price is far above rubies. One writer put it this way. He said, to my wife, you are braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, smarter than you think, and loved more than you know. If I could give you one thing in life, I would give you the ability to see yourself through my eyes. Only then would you realize how special you are to me. You are my sunshine. Wives, think about that. Love is committed. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4 and 5. He mentions two things together. In verse 4, he said, let marriage be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed be undefiled, for fornicators and adulterers God will judge. 25 years ago, a man came to me, and he had been into drugs and immorality and unfaithful to his wife. And he said, never do that. The price is way too high. Society now, not a big deal. Christian life, you're different. You're that kind of committed husband. And then right with that, he says in verse 5, let your character be free from the love of money, being content with whatever you have, for he himself has said, I'll never desert you, nor will I forsake you. And so having that disposition that I want to serve God, and I want to have the right attitude about serving him. That just this past Friday, I was talking to a senior from another congregation, and they said, I'm not interested in giving everything we have, and they have an abundance, to my children. They have their own investments, and this person has investments, and they'll get the house. But meanwhile, there's other forms of money they're just spending on others, making donations to poor families in the neighborhood or to other families with crippled children that are hurting. And so you get to think about, how would I like to bless others now that I have the opportunity, being moral now, because God has called me to that. Love, just a couple more and we're done. And love includes being joyful. Ecclesiastes 9:9, enjoy life with the woman you love all the days of your fleeting life, which he's given you under the sun. For this is your reward in life and your toil, which you've labored under the sun. I got a graphic of a husband and wife swinging. I don't know how old they are. I'll just say 30. And say, Paul, is that what you guys do? Oh, yeah. Pushing 900 years old, what do? I go to the park. When I'm passing the park, there's one couple blocks from our house. Swing on the swings. If you're someplace, there's a sliding board. Man, slide on the sliding board, ride the roller coaster, have fun, do those things or those other things that you would really appreciate. We talk about sometimes spending money on experiences, on the doing things, not just having things. And so I thought, well, Paul, what does it mean for you? It means play. It means laugh more. Pause and smell the roses. It's a beautiful time. We walk in the neighborhood and stop and, oh man, here's the lilacs and here's the roses and here's these other kind of things. And so do fun stuff that is fun for you. Not everybody likes the same kind of thing, but be a positive, optimistic person. Look on the bright side. Hold hands. Be forgiving. Spend time in nature. Enjoy the sunshine. Rejoice in the Lord. Get adequate sleep. Be more generous. Have meals on the deck. Smile more. Why? Because you got this little time. We're zooming through life. And
That's what David said. I have been young and now I'm old. But how long did it take to get there? It was like that. Man, just 2 days ago, I remember I was 10, and then I was 12, and then I was 22, and then 42 and 62. 82 is still down the road there away, but wow, let's enjoy the time we have rather than just spend it. And then lastly, love is putting God first. Matthew 22:37, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. That commandment was originally cited in Deuteronomy 6:5. Jesus is citing that Old Testament principle, put God first. In Ephesians 5 and verse 1, Brother Jim related to that, and he said, be imitators of God as beloved children. Little kids kind of imitate mom and dad. They imitate your speech, imitate your example. And he says, walk in love, just as Christ also loved you. Because husbands, you are to lead. Isaiah 6 and verse 8, then I heard a voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and whom will go for us? And then I said, here am I, send me. Husbands, lead. Lead in spiritual things. Because generally the wives want to be spiritual. Sometimes they're waiting for you to set the example. And that's what God has called us to do. So what have we looked at this morning in 30 minutes? Love your wife as yourself. Sacrifice and provide for her. Speak to her gently. Live in an understanding way. Be thankful for her. Be committed to her and to God. Live joyfully with your wife. And put God first. Now, as we've done that, I want to switch back now out of that particular format and come over here to the ending of the what we call the deck. Here's what all should have been in the right order, but it decided it didn't want to do that this morning. And interestingly, look at our last song. It is going to be that reflects Isaiah's statement, Lord, send me. You've got that opportunity this morning. If you're not baptized, we can baptize you. In fact, we've been doing some work on the baptistry. But if you're willing to wait, we can have that filled up in 30 minutes. We got the clothes. We can baptize you into Christ. It's a life-changing step and a life-changing event. Or you say, I want to do it this afternoon or tomorrow, whenever. If you're ready, God will be ready. And what he wants to know, do you have this same great attitude as Isaiah had of, Lord, send me?